All right, we're on.
I heard that.
Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome not only the commissioners to our meeting, but also the public. And I think you will find today's presentation absolutely wonderful and how important mental health is to our community. So we've got an expert coming to speak on that with you. Look forward to that presentation. I would like to call the meeting to order, and I would like to have a motion to approve the agenda and a second, and if there's any changes to the agenda, let me know.
So moved.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, all of those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Second, I would like to have you all had a chance to preview the minutes from the December 17th meeting. So I would ask for, first of all, are there any changes to the minutes? If not, then I would ask for a motion to approve the minutes. Second, please.
So moved.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. Thank you. I'd like to give a little chair report. And first of all, I'd like to say thank you to the sun. We actually have it today coming in and streaming into the room. So that's great. We're going to be implementing the work session concept to the commissioners. And so it will be extremely beneficial, I think, for us to move some of our projects and task force projects forward. From the last month's work session, Colette and I met with Bob Holdridge regarding assistance with helping us in developing the Clark County Commission on Aging work plan. And Bob has a wonderful expertise and depth of knowledge on work plans and assistance with commissions and boards. And he has agreed to help Colette develop and finalize a plan that will be brought forth at the next, work session for us next month. So I look forward to you receiving the details and allowing to have a full, robust discussion with where we want the commission to go forward and what that would look like. So I'm very, very excited about that. And again, thank you, Bob, for agreeing to help us with that. The other thing that we are coming out of the work plan on is trying to define our advocacy role, which I think has been lacking as the commission, and I think will be very important as we move forward. That would be partnering with other groups regarding common interest. And we will be having a meeting with Dave Kelly of the Washington Association of Parent Agencies on Aging regarding partnering with them and with their organization in common legislative goals and objectives. And I think that will be very important, and will also piggyback on our further discussion with the work plan. Karen Wall, the vice chair, and myself are privileged this year in 2014 to not only meet with Commissioner Mielke, who is the chair of the County Commissioners, but will also be meeting on a quarterly basis with Commissioner Stewart. So I think we will find some significant backing by the County Commissioners as we move forward through this year. So I'm very excited about that. The Community Engagement Committee, we're going to give some updates on some of the committees because we didn't allow for that during our discussion. So. Yeah, I will look at the committee chairs if they have anything they want to add. ABC News, Diane Sawyer did a wonderful news program, our segment on time banking and how it dealt with one community, and I believe it was in Kentucky. Is that correct? Kentucky. And if you do a search engine under time banking, ABC News or ABC News time banking or Diane Sawyer time banking, you can look at it on YouTube, but I think it's an excellent program for us to view, and I'm as excited about time banking as I've been all along, and thank you, Kathy, for heading that task force for us. Is there anything you would like to add?
Just that we're proceeding with getting the application together for the VISTA program, Volunteers in Service to America. Hope to get that submitted. We'll be meeting next month, I believe, or the end of this month, actually, with the coordinator of that program, and she is going to work with us to see how we can get this focused so that it will be hopefully accepted by the Seattle office, who decides who gets the VISTAs assigned. So we're very fortunate to have Colleen Kuhn helping us with that.
Great.
And actually Colette from the planning office is working very diligently on that with us also.
Great, thank you so much. And so we're very excited about moving that project forward, and I certainly want to thank Kathy and her committee for all the excellent work they've done and expertise, and we'll be voting on a budget for that task and project later on in today's meeting. Supportive services, Randy's going to be working and trying to develop what our next steps for telehealth is, and so hopefully we'll be having some discussions on the commission level about what that looks like, and hopefully we'll be able to proceed with the telehealth. The other thing is Clark County itself is moving, and we got a press release this week or last week, is moving to reduce jail stays linked to mental health issues. And I think that's going to be something that we'll see developing through that. And it was great press release, especially since we're having our speaker today talk to us about mental health issues within our county. I would like to acknowledge the individuals and groups that are by appreciating their efforts in helping us establish our strategy of the Aging Readiness Plan. And so I would like to again thank those partners that we have with developing those programs and our strategies. Healthy communities, I learned from Karen the other day that the weatherization program has received funding. And so we'll be working on that project again within the near future as well. The Communications Committee, there is a Speakers Bureau that is available for events, so if you want something, you can go online and request that or talk to our chairs, which is Lisa Rasmussen and Patty Gray, about that. The future events that we have coming up are the 50 Plus Expo, the Clark County Home Garden Show, the Recycle Arts Fair, which will be coming up as well, and the Board Retreat. So those are future events that we'll be having with that. Housing, Let's Share Housing Group will launch the event in March for their program here in Clark County, and we'll be presenting on February 18th, 2014, work session at 3:30 p.m. So if you're interested in that program, please feel free to come and join us for the presentation. I would also like to thank Bob again for his expertise and willing to assist on our work plan with Colette, and I think that we'll be very, very proud of the work project that we'll be presenting to the community. The Universal Green Design Task Force met today, and will be working on their specific programs throughout the year, and we'll look forward to hearing from Chuck on that. My understanding is the Volunteer Cyber Program is moving forward on transportation and mobility. Am I correct on that, Chuck?
Yeah.
Okay, so good. I didn't mess up there, so that's great.
Close enough.
I was telling the commissioners earlier, I showed up last Tuesday for this meeting, so that tells you what kind of month I've already had, so I'm not surprised if I didn't miss something here. The next Clark County Commission on Aging meeting will be February 18th at 4:30, and it's going to be, our presenter will be Warren Neff of the Food Assistance Program, and so we'll look forward to having an update on him from him regarding that program in Clark County. So thank you so much. Any of the other committee chairs have anything that would like to share with us today? Okay, I'd like to take this opportunity now to turn it over to our speaker, which is Peggy McCarthy from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I was sharing with Peggy earlier, I was not aware of the program, and I, how do you pronounce the anonym for that?
Well, in Clark County, most of us say NAMI.
NAMI?
In Cowlitz, they say NAMI.
NAMI. Being from the South, I would probably say NAMI.
I've asked National what the preferred pronunciation is, and nobody has a preference, so.
Great. Well, in NAMI, I wasn't aware of the program until just the last few months, mainly due to one of their board members, Ann Donnelly, and she made me aware of NAMI and actually solicited a donation out of me for the program, and I went online and did that, and so I've read up on the services that they provide. Peggy has a breadth of knowledge and expertise in dealing with mental health issues and was extremely wonderful in setting up programs and a company that during the Reagan years when they were taking people out of institutions and having them come back into the community. And so I really look forward to Peggy's presentation. And Peggy, if you want to add anything else to that introduction, please do so, and I look forward to hearing your presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I can stand or I can sit. If I'm closer to the microphone, it may be easier for some of you in the back to hear. So
you can tilt it down towards you.
Yeah, and I speak loudly, so I don't want to drown anyone. But thank you very much. I'm really thrilled to be here for the Commission on Aging because as we get older, we develop more mental problems. Just thinking about dementia and Alzheimer's as we age, those are two of the types of mental health problems that NAMI does deal with. So we work with people all the way from small children who are diagnosed with ADD, ADHD when they first go to school, all the way through life. We here in Clark County NAMI hasn't been terribly active in Southwest Washington recently. NAMI in Clark County did have an executive director, but for the last few years she was living with a undiagnosed terminal cancer diagnosis. And so things weren't moving along, which may be why most of you didn't hear about NAMI much. So I've been there since September, and as was mentioned, I had a medical education company for 30 years, and one of our first projects that we did was back when Reagan was president and the mental hospitals were being closed. NAMI was just starting then, and in fact, NAMI in Vancouver and NAMI in Longview were two of the first NAMI organizations. They both started as schizophrenia support groups at that time. And it was these little schizophrenia support groups from around the nation that banded together and formed the National Alliance on Mental Illness. So for many years, the conditions that the people worked with was schizophrenia, then bipolar disorder, and sort of branched out. And now we really work with any type of brain disorder, including concussions and TBI, the traumatic brain injuries from vets and so forth. So anybody who has anything wrong with their mental processes can find a place in NAMI. All of our services are at no cost to anybody who participates in them. We work directly with the consumers who have a mental illness diagnosis, and we work directly, again, at no cost with their family members and their friends. So we're open to virtually everybody in the three counties. And we provide wonderful classes and programs for everyone. So, as I just said, that's just summarizing, or that slide summarizes what I just said. We're open to anybody, and in case you don't know it, one in four people will have a mental illness diagnosis at some time in their life. And many mental illnesses are totally recoverable. You may have a diagnosis, there may be some medication for a while. Some people are fortunate enough to be able to get off medication. Others have to stay on medication for the rest of their lives. But you know, one in four of us. So, you know, we look around this room and there are probably eight people in this room who have a mental illness diagnosis or have had one. So it's a very common disease, much more common than many of the other physical diseases that we deal with. And one of the things that we're trying to do is to get the word out to reduce the stigma of mental illness, that having a mental illness diagnosis is just the same as having a diagnosis of diabetes or heart disease. You know, you can recover from those, but many people have to stay on medication the rest of their lives. So one of the things that the whole mental health community is trying to bring that mental illness more into the fold of general health, rather than separating off and saying, oh, those people are weird. So we have a lot of programs around that area now. So we have a number of classes for consumers, and we call the people with mental illness diagnosis a consumer of mental health services. So one of our most popular programs is In Our Own Voice, where people with a mental illness diagnosis are taught the skills to go out and talk to the community about what their diagnosis is and how it affects them and how they interact in the community. So we use this program in a program that we call Parents and Teachers as Allies, where we go into the schools and we present a two-hour program to faculty and staff. And we're going to be offering CE credit for teachers to do this now. But it teaches them about the mental illnesses that are often diagnosed in children. And one of the last projects that I did in my medical education company was looking at school medication administration of drugs. And over the 10 years, we were funded through an NIH grant for this program. It was astounding to us, and we were working directly with school nurses across the nation in this program. When we started the program in about 2002, it was unheard of to have a preschool child diagnosed with a treatable, you know, a drug-treatable mental illness. We had nobody in preschool who had any mental illness diagnosis, and we were working with lots of preschools around the nation. And in elementary school, there was depression. A lot of kids were taking antidepressants. A few kids were getting diagnosed with anxiety and some of the OCD and some of the other mental illnesses that are fairly common. And in junior high, there might be one or two cases of diagnosed bipolar disorder and nobody with schizophrenia. And in high school, you know, junior, seniors, 17, 18, 19-year-olds might be diagnosed with schizophrenia. By 2011-12, we saw preschoolers who were getting diagnosed with depression, preschoolers who were getting diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and, you know, the whole spectrum of mental illnesses had moved down in age. So part of that is coming from the fact that we're diagnosing mental illnesses earlier, but the medications that are used for these sorts of disorders are really serious meds, and none of them has been tested in children. And so, you know, one of my real concerns, and it's concerns of school health people, is what is this going to do to the brains of the children? And we just don't know that. So that's one of the areas that is touching me, because I've worked in this area for a while and I want us to be working more on that. So we're going to be using this Parents and Teachers as Allies as a huge program over the next few years, where we hope to go out to every single school and alert them to what's happening. And then after we teach the parents and the staff and faculty, we teach the parents about mental illness. So that when either parent or teacher notices something, some behavior in a child that might indicate that they have a mental illness or might be developing one, they can get together and talk and then determine what the best course of action is for that child. We have a peer-to-peer class, so this is where we teach people with mental illnesses how to do support groups with other peers. and it's a really effective program. We have a number of support groups going on in the three counties. We also do facilitator training for several other support groups, our Connection Recovery Group, and then some general support groups. We're starting what I think is going to be a very exciting program. We visit ADAPT and Station 2. Does everybody know those programs? Anybody? No? Okay. So Peace Health has programs that are outpatient, inpatient. So at the old Southwest Hospital on Main Street, there is a psychiatric unit there, and people can go there once they're diagnosed with a mental illness. They can go there and get their meds stabilized, get their behavior stabilized. They're there from 3 to, I think the maximum is 10 days that they can stay there. Then they get referred, and that's an inpatient program. It's a locked ward, and it's people of all ages, adults of all ages. And then they have a second program there called ADAPT, which is an outpatient program, and people go there for usually 2 weeks, but there are certain objectives that they have to meet before they leave, and some people can meet those in a week, and some people take 2 weeks. But these are, ADAPT provides skills and tools for people who have just come out of an acute crisis of mental illness, and gives them some tools and just skills to help them stay in recovery. So by the time a person leaves the ADAPT program, they're stabilized on medication, they're ready to go back out to their homes, to some of them to their jobs, and others come to us to volunteer at that point. So we've been meeting with the ADAPT and Station 2 people, and we're starting a support group that is going to, in all three counties, by the way, that is going to reinforce the skills and tools that ADAPT teaches. And we have others, and so they're going to adopt some of the things that we want to teach to help keep people in recovery. And we're going to be gathering data on these programs, following up, you know, after somebody finishes ADAPT, after they finish 12 weeks of our support group, and maybe 24 weeks, and maybe 36 weeks. So we'll be gathering data on how they progress. Can they go back to work? Are they staying in recovery? Are they having a relapse and stopping taking their medication and end up back in the hospital and recycling through the programs? But these programs are a drop in the bucket because Station 2 can only have 10 people there and ADAPT can take up to maybe 15. But we've got thousands of people with mental illness in the three counties. I don't know if you understand the severity of the jail situation where 50 to 60% of the people in our local jail have a mental illness diagnosis. It's really serious. And these are people, for the most part, who have just committed a misdemeanor. They go off their medications, they act out, they get arrested and put in jail. And so we've also been meeting with the corrections people, and we're going to be starting this support group that I just mentioned in the jail. We'll be offering support groups for men and for women with mental illness in the jails. We have been behind a lot of the behind-the-scenes work on this build-out in the jail has come from our meetings with the jail staff. We're going to also be offering a program there, Family to Family, which is on this list. And this is a class for families and friends. So one of the things we hope to do at the jail is if there is somebody with a mental illness diagnosis who has committed a felony, and they do need to be in jail, they've committed a felony, we will be offering this Family to Family course. And Family to Family is one of NAMI's oldest courses. And we have data showing that when family members take this class, the family members not only deal better with their loved one's mental illness diagnosis, but the person with the mental illness diagnosis does better and stays in recovery longer because they have a family support system. The families learn skills at Family to Family, so that they can help out their loved one much better. And so we're going to be offering family-to-family at the jail. And if a incarcerated person's family members comes to that family-to-family group and they finish it, then we will get into court and be able to deal, you know, to try to reduce the sentence or, you know, get better treatment for the person in jail. And for people who have just committed misdemeanors, we're hoping to eventually have a program where they can completely circumvent jail, which will save the county thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars every month, not having to incarcerate people. And we and other nonprofit organizations will have those people come to us to volunteer. So right now, we have a lot of volunteers in our office with mental illness diagnoses, and they do everything from help us create new programs to holding newsletters to answering phones, whatever they are comfortable doing and whatever they're capable of doing. We also teach a basics class, and we have a basics class starting on Wednesday night. And this is a class just for parents who have a child in K through 12, or preschool through 12th grade, who has been diagnosed with a mental illness. And in basics, it's a 6-week long course, and in that, we teach them all about what mental illness diagnosis means. How do they get services to their child? How do they set up an independent educational plan in the school so that their child can get the best care and the best treatment in school so that they can have a healthy and a successful school life rather than dropping out? So many of the people in our Own Voice program are adults who, you know, had mental illness when they were small children but wasn't diagnosed. And most of those people drop out of school. They don't stay in school, they can't be successful in school. So we're trying to reach the needs of every group in the community. We have in our Parents and Teachers as Allies in our Own Voice. We also have family members who tell their stories in those programs. And those are as powerful as the stories of the person with mental illness. And we have family members who get trained as facilitators for family support groups and parents supporting parents. We have a whole bunch of other consumer programs, most of which we're just starting. As I mentioned, we have volunteer opportunities. In our office, when I came in September as the executive director, I was the only employee. We had almost no volunteers. I convinced our board that we needed to hire an administrative assistant because I really wanted to make NAMI grow, and I also knew we had to provide services in 3 counties because there were no services in Kalispell, Skamania. We receive about 60% of our funding from the state regional support network. Is everybody familiar with the RSNs and Southwest Behavioral Health? Okay, the state of Washington, a couple of years ago, set up, 3 years ago, I guess it was, divided the state into regional support networks for mental health. And at that, the first breakup of the state, Clark County was its own RSN. Skamania County was in another RSN, and Cowlitz County was in another RSN. This last year, they reduced the number of RSNs in the state and added Cowlitz and Skamania to Clark County. So we are the Southwest Washington RSM. Next year, I've been told that we're going to have 2 more counties added to our RSM. So we'll be, as I've been told, bringing in Wakayakum and Klickitat into the Southwest Washington RSM. At that time, my plan is that we will provide services in 5 counties because neither one of those counties have any NAMI services. And I believe that NAMI is so essential to the well-being of every member of each of the, every resident of each of the counties. So we have a woman who has just come over to us from Catholic Community Services. She was on the staff there for about 10 years. Just before the holidays, she asked me if she could come over. She wanted to retire, and she said, I really want to work with NAMI. So I said, well, let's apply for a VISTA grant, as you're doing. And so we're in that process now. But she is setting up a program that we're calling the Parent Center. So one of the things that I have become very aware of is that people with mental illness have a really hard time parenting. And the parents talk to me about it, and their children talk to me about it. And, you know, often they just don't have the skills to do a good job parenting. So one of the things that this VISTA member, who's already in our office working and waiting until her VISTA grant comes through, we're setting up a parent center. So she's already got 7 clients coming in, and she's working with them independently, assessing what skills they need, and then we will be providing those. We're going to have a parent support group for that program. So our first year, we're just going to take in parents with a mental illness diagnosis whose children either do or don't have a mental health diagnosis. Next year, we'll add to that parents who don't have a mental illness diagnosis, but who have children who do. Because parenting children with a mental illness diagnosis is often just as difficult for a parent as parenting with a mental illness diagnosis. And so we'll add that group to this program. I'm really excited about it, and we'll be getting referrals from that from our parents and teachers as allies programs. In that program, we're also going to be starting a teen support group. There is currently a teen support group for girls that's run by Catholic Community Services, but nobody's had the nerve to set one up for boys, and it's the boys in their teenage years. That's when the majority of patients who are, or people who are diagnosed with schizophrenia are young men. By a great margin, it's young men between now probably 12 and 25, 30. That's when the first schizophrenic breaks usually occur. But it's predominantly in young men. Women can be diagnosed with schizophrenia, but this is a problem for young teenage boys. And so we're going to be starting a support group for them in the next few months here in Clark County. We have depression, anxiety, and it's PTSD, DAP support groups. We're working with the VA now, and we're going to be holding one of these support groups with the VA. We hold them in the other counties as well, because there are a lot of people who just have, you know, just take an antidepressant, or have severe anxiety and PTSD with all of the military coming back. We're dealing with a lot of people, men and women, with PTSD. And we're all susceptible to PTSD. Anybody who's had a trauma in their life, you know, may have PTSD, and it may be undiagnosed. But that affects how we react in our daily lives. So we're trying to reach anybody with those diagnoses. We're setting up a community education panel, and this came out of one of our consumers who went into the hospital recently voluntarily because she was so depressed. And she was really upset about the treatment there. And so she came back and she said, I'll never go to the hospital again. I don't care whether I'm, you know, bleeding out. And this is somebody who has attempted suicide numerous times. And so I said, okay, let's start a program that where we can go around and talk to all the first responders. We can talk to businesses who may not handle employing people with mental illness well. We'll talk to all of the community groups such as, Lions and Rotary and those sorts of civic organizations, and really get out there and try to diminish the stigma of mental illness with those. So we're in the process of setting up this community education panel, which is going to be comprised of people with all the mental illness diagnoses, the common ones, and they're going to do the In Our Own Voice, telling their own story. And the thing they'll do here is say, this is what happens. I have depression, and this is how I behave when I'm severely depressed. And I may call the crisis line, and they may send the police and the fire department to my house. And so here's how those people can best interact with me. We're trying to get really down to the very practical issues of how can we better help the people with mental illness in the community. We're, as I mentioned, the Corrections Community Service Program. We're working really hard with the corrections facilities in all three counties, trying to help reduce the cost to the counties in corrections by having to jail so many people with mental illness, but at the same time trying to provide better services to the people in the jails. And then one of our big fun events, and when I came into NAMI, I was told, please, please, please do the annual holiday celebration. And so this had been done up to a few years ago. And it's a sit-down dinner for 300, and it's held at the Lukey Center. And NAMI has this reputation for hand-making stockings for all 300 people who come to have dinner there, a free sit-down turkey dinner. And we stuff the stockings, and we give gifts to everybody. And so this year we scheduled it. I said, okay, you know, and didn't know how I was going to raise the money. Still hadn't raised the money to cover all those bills. But we held this dinner, and it was on the night of the big storm. And so in the daytime, we had all these calls saying, I can't get out of my driveway. I can't get out of my house. We had buses coming from Skamania, and the buses couldn't run. And I thought, oh my gosh, we've just gone in the hole for the facility and all this food. The food's all ready, and what are we going to do? And we had so many people coming without having a reservation that we filled the room.
Wow.
So there are a lot of hungry mental health people out there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'd love to work with your council, and many of them, we have many, many people who are elderly in those groups, lots of young people, and lots of children. So one of the things that we're really pushing on is NAMI membership. So this slide is our NAMI needs. In the state of Washington, there are 1,200 NAMI members. In the nation, the membership, they just haven't been pushing membership. And so in the nation, there are like 100-some-odd thousand members. And I'm pushing NAMI membership in Southwest Washington. I'd love to have everybody here become a NAMI member, because I was just up in Washington, in Olympia, yesterday, lobbying about legislation that is coming before our legislature that will help provide better services for people with mental illness. And I can't do it legitimately if I say, and here we have about 220 members, so we've got a sizable membership. Many of it has come in the last 4 months because I've been pushing this. But I'd love to have 10,000 members in Southwest Washington by next year. So I'm gonna be handing out these newsletters, and there's a membership application on the back. We have a $35 membership and a $5 membership, and I would love to have everybody here become a member and have your families and friends become members, because we really need to have the numbers so we can be efficacious as we push for legislation. And we can't do it with 220 members. We're laughed at. We need donations for unfunded and new programs. And as I said, Southwest Behavioral Health covers about 60% of our needs, but I'm adding things all the time. So, my role is to bring in the money. And so if you're members of foundations or have family foundations or anything, we'd love to know and know how we can partner with you. So we'll be rolling out a lot of grant applications soon. We have volunteers with mental health diagnoses and without. And if you've never worked around people with mental illness, and some of them with pretty serious mental illness, I feel so blessed to be working with the people now. I'm having the best time in my life, and I've always loved what I've done in my work, but I'm just having a really great time working with people with mental illness. It's a lot of fun and a lot of challenge. So if you're looking for some volunteer work, please come and join us. We have lots of things people can do. We're also looking for committee chairs, and I love that you've got all the committees here. I'm getting the board organized now so that there will be committee chairs for all the things we do. And hopefully by, you know, in 6 months, we'll be as well organized as you all are. We have a NAMI walk, which is the biggest fundraiser for NAMIs around the nation. We walk with Oregon because there is a NAMI walk in Seattle, but we're so close to Portland that it doesn't make sense to have everybody who participates in the walk drive up to Seattle. So we walk in Oregon, and the NAMI walk is at the end of May. And I'd love to have your Council on Aging form a team. I'll be sending you some information about it. You don't have to walk. You can be a virtual walker, and you just have to donate. But it's really a lot of fun. The walk is across a couple of bridges, so the Hawthorne Bridge and the Seal Bridge in Oregon. And it's just a lovely 5K, you know, slow walk. It's really slow because it's crowded and you can't walk fast. But it's a delightful walk. And my goal is to raise $20,000 to $30,000 this year. Last year we raised about $4,000. So I've got big dreams for NAMI. We're also going to be approaching businesses to be sponsors for some of our specialty rooms. We have just moved to a new office location. It's tremendous, but we don't have a full kitchen, and we want to be teaching parents particularly about cooking healthy foods, because people with mental illness, most people with mental illness crave chocolate and sweets. And often the nutrition is not good, and I'm really pushing nutrition. So we want a full-blown kitchen so we can teach cooking. We have a classroom, but we need a big screen, and you know, so some of those things. We're going to need more tables and chairs, and we have a yard at this site. And so we want to have some play equipment back there. We've already gotten the donation of a table and picnic table and chairs. We want a grill because we want to be able to have parties, or have the support groups be able to have a grill, event in the area. And then we have a library, and we need many more books. It hasn't been kept up well. So if anybody wants to donate anything, we'd love to have you donate things. Or if you have good contacts with businesses, call me. And so Southwest Behavioral Health goes through and funds certain programs. And these are currently unfunded programs or only partially funded programs. And if anything hits your heart, and you'd like to put together a group of people to fund something, we would love that. I have a price tag on any one of them. And we really had to increase our budget this year just to reach out to Calhoun and Skamania County, because I've been busy getting people trained for Clark County. But now they have to go to Calhoun and Skamania County until we can train people in those counties to do the work that we're doing here. And so I've had to add mileage, because most of the people who work with us are living on disability, and they don't have the gas money. So do I buy gas to go to the NAMI thing, or do I buy food or medication? And so I've added into our budget with Southwest Behavioral Health the cost for gas. So I'm really pleased about that, and pleased that they're funding that. But I see that as being a need for about a year, maybe 2 years at the most, until we get enough people, and then we have to move them to Klickitat and Wakayakum County. So, you know, we probably need gas money for a while. So our service location in Clark County is 8019 Northeast 13th Avenue. We just moved in there at the end of November. It's absolutely wonderful space, and one of my goals is to go after a capacity grant in the next year so that we can buy it. I've already talked to the owner, and he's agreeable to that. So it really will make a nice space for us. In Cowles County, we share an office with the ombudsperson from Cowles County, and that's at the County Health Department up there. And we'll be setting up something similar in Skamania right now. I just go up there and, you know, we meet in the lobby of the health department or, you know, wherever is convenient. We are doing programs on the Vancouver VA campus. So we have a family-to-family class that's starting there next week. That will be our first VA program. And so we have family members from the vets coming to this class, as well as community family members. And as I mentioned, we're going to be doing support groups at corrections in Clark County. We've been doing parents and teachers as allies in the Clark County schools, and we'll be doing all of these programs in Cowles and Skamania as well. And I'm the executive director, and Jenny Black is our administrative assistant. In addition to the woman from Catholic Community Services, we have two interns who are getting their master's in social work from the University of Southern California. And I got this call out of the blue one of my first days at NAMI saying, would you be interested in having an intern? So these are two people who are completing their MSW programs. One has been with us since September and leaves at the end of April and finishes his MSW then. And the other one just started with us on January and will leave in August. And they have promised me that we will have a steady flow of interns so that we always have two in our office at any one time. But everybody else, oh, and we have a woman who is a consumer of mental health services but is getting a special stipend from the Services for the Blind. This woman is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. She has several mental health diagnoses, she has serious physical diagnoses, and she is officially blind, not because her eyes can't see, but because she has a condition with her eyelids where her eyelid, they spasm and she can't keep her eyes open. She wears glasses that have little lids to keep her eyelids open. But she said yesterday she had to leave her, and she's in a wheelchair, and she had to leave her wheelchair at church, not yesterday, Sunday, because her neck went into spasm, because her, you know, her whole body goes into spasm, and her head turned all the way around to the right, and she couldn't move it. If she loses her vision, if her eyelids fall down, she has a white cane, and she can tap her way home in her wheelchair. But this time she couldn't take her wheelchair home, so she had to call emergency services to come and pick her up and take her home. So this is one of the bravest people I've ever met. And we've got her doing benefits counseling. She's been through a lot of benefits training, and she's working with other people with mental illness about how do you get benefits, and how do you get housing, and how do you get food if you need food. And I'm thrilled about that. But I need to have funding to continue her in this, because if she doesn't work 10 hours a week, she's going to lose a piece of her medical insurance, and we don't want her to do that. So our number is there. I brought newsletters. I have brochures here and some of my cards, and we can pass those around and pass them around for anybody in the audience if you would like some. If you have places where you can drop any newsletters off, take a bunch. we have another newsletter. Our newsletter is once a month, and we're getting our newsletter put together tomorrow. We'll be printing it on Thursday, and it goes out before the first of the month. So are there questions?
Peggy, first of all, it's an amazing scope of the programs. I didn't know that NAMI existed, so I'm just in awe. And I just want to say that first, because I also have some guilt about this question I'm about to ask. given everything that you already do. We have a scarcity of mental health resources for our geriatric population. You know, there are some inpatient resources up in the Seattle area and also across the river in the Tualatin area. But here in Southwest Washington, we really have a crisis.
Absolutely. I'm very aware of that.
Is there anyone working on that? Is there a group working on it? Have any insight into
I can tell you that there's nobody in the county focusing on that, but I would love to partner with you all to do a grant application to do something about that. And, you know, maybe the first piece of it would be, do you know the numbers that we're looking at? Do you know? Because
I just know in my day-to-day work often across consumers and families.
I am flabbergasted at the lack of data around mental health issues that is available in Clark County and or Kalispell counties. We have nothing, and we're struggling to put together good grant applications to solve problems, because without the numbers, you can't do a whole lot. And so even without funding, I'd be happy to have us work with you to gather data, you know, maybe do some surveys, because one of the areas that we see as really sad is that people over 50, you know, I don't know what you're calling seniors.
You know, as I age, my definition
changes. Right now I'm thinking 80 is still young, 90 maybe. You know, getting up there, but you know, so let's take the AARP view of it and say anybody over 50. We have people coming to our family-to-family classes who are saying, you know, I've lived with this spouse with mental illness for 30, 40 years, and I need help. Or I'm an elderly person, you know, I've had a child with mental health illness, and that child is still living at home, and I'm 70 and the child is 50, and what do I do? So the needs are huge, and just getting the family-to-family class into the senior population would be very helpful for anybody who is living with somebody with mental illness, whether it's spouse, partner, parent, or a child. Would be a real gift to the senior population. But I would love to have us partner with you all to gather the data, because we don't know the extent of this problem in this community, and we need to understand it better. So I'd love to sit down and figure out how we might do something.
I again would like to echo what Patty said. I'm totally in awe of your program and your abilities to do that, and I'm so pleased that we were able to have you come to our group to speak to us tonight. And I want to thank whoever recommended her, which was Colette and Jackie, I'm sure, one of the two. And I'm actually going to thank Ann Donnelly for getting me to solicit a donation from me for your group, because now I see how important it is, so I really am going to thank her. Any of the other commissioners have questions for Peggy or comments? Okay.
Yeah, Peggy, I guess I'm just blown away by the lack of data and information. I especially in today's world, that's what we live and die by,
yes.
and everything. Is it, do you have, do you, do you have any kind of a reason why we're lacking in that? Is it just that we just haven't been paying attention, and all of a sudden here we are, the tsunami is here, and do you have any idea?
Yeah, I think what's happened is nationwide mental illness or mental health issues, there is a real stigma. And so it's been separated from physical health for many, many years. And then second to that is that the treatments for mental illness have been slow in coming, and they're not good. Most of the drugs that people take for mental illness have serious side effects, and people don't want to continue to take them. And so our medical community, Western medicine, only wants to treat successfully. You know, they don't want to have treatment failures. And what you have chronically, if you're a psychiatrist or a mental health provider, you have failures because people go on the meds for a few months or a few years, and then they go off, either because they're starting to feel well and think, oh, I can go off, or the side effects are so bad. So one of our board members is a pharmacist who has worked for the last 20 years in mental health. And she is outstanding, has outstanding knowledge of medications. And so one of the things we do, she does drug consults with any one of our consumers who wants to meet with her. And she, every single person who meets with her, she can say, well, you know, you might have fewer side effects if you took this med at a different time of day, or you split the dose, or instead of taking this with it, you took something else. And she doesn't just cover the mental health drugs, because one of the big problems in mental health, people with a mental health diagnosis die 25 years earlier than somebody who doesn't have a mental health diagnosis. And that's not due to suicide, it's due to the medical conditions that come with taking mental health drugs. So almost all of the psychotropic meds that are prescribed cause a person to develop the metabolic triad, which is diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. And so that's how people die 25 years earlier. And so we're working on that, and we've talked about going after some funding to see what we can do, and that's why we want to do a cooking class, because I'm very interested in seeing what we can do to help reduce that onset of physical disease along with the mental health disease. But I think it's the stigma of mental illness, and I think it's that you can't treat mental illness successfully most of the time. People go up and down, and it seems that after a diagnosis as a young person, people bounce, they go on meds, they stop taking them, they go back on, they stop taking them. And it takes some people 3 times, and it takes some people 10 times before they finally realize that I do better when I'm taking meds, and then they can stay on them.
Hey, Lisa?
So, I applaud you, and I'm glad that you moved, because your other location was
horrible.
Yeah, well, it was.
It was depressing.
It was. And everyone here knows that for the years I've been on the Aging Readiness Task Force, this is my cry about the injustice and the lack of mental health. So I'll definitely be calling you.
Good.
So, but one of my questions is working and doing an internship with the RSN and in the mental health is, they used to have a very active role in the mental health court. And so when I read the press release about, you know, what the jails were going to be doing and stuff, my first thought was, what does that mean for the people for the mental health court? And then also what the RSN, or the Behavioral Health Unit, whatever, however they classify themselves now, is going, because they used to have a liaison that used to go from there and assist the people at the mental health court. So have you heard anything on how the courts or how the mental, are they going to increase it, decrease it? And then in the other part of it is, I'm sure through the RSN and with some other people, and you were asking about the numbers and stuff, I know that Connie had some numbers, and I know that our area on aging and disabilities may be able to help us research to get you some different numbers. But what we run up against is, and especially in a few of our lines of work here, is HIPAA and accessing the information.
Yeah.
And it is very daunting and horrible, even with a court order,
yes,
to get providers to,
yes,
turn that loose. And,
yeah,
so there's the lack of the ability to have any kind of a census and keep on that. But, you know, it's something that I'm willing to help you with.
Yeah.
So back to, do you have any idea what will happen with what the RSN is willing to do with the mental health court, or?
Yeah, well, we're working really closely with the people on the RSN. We're working with corrections. NAMI also sponsors the crisis intervention training with the police force, and we're hoping to sponsor a crisis intervention training with the corrections system as well. But the mental health court, so in the first place, if you've committed a felony, you can't go to mental health court.
Right.
And the people who can go to mental health court are selected very carefully.
Yeah.
We're still trying to understand how those selections are made. We've been starting to think strategically, and we have just brought a judge on to our parties, coming onto our board, we hope, next week.
Which one is that, do you know?
I'll deal with that later. But he's been very active in mental health court and with the VA court. And so we're hoping that will happen next week. And we've just got to get in closer with that whole system.
Exactly.
And we have told the jail that we will provide advocates to go,
okay,
to court with people. Because one of the big problems that occurs, so a person in jail gets assigned to mental health court after their first hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And in their first hearing, what happens is they're not taking medications, and they, you know, so they've been off medications, they get arrested because they've done something foolish. And then they have the first hearing within the first 24 hours, usually after they get jailed, so they're still not on medications. And so they respond foolishly,
yep,
when they're asked questions. So they say, no, I don't want this, and I don't want that, and then they never,
right,
get to mental health.
No.
So we want somebody with them for that first hearing and all the way through. And so we've told the corrections system that we will provide that. And we have peer support people,
awesome,
that we can train specifically to be jail advocates.
Good.
So, you know, we're working on it.
Because when you go to arraignment court, they have them there for anybody that got arrested on a domestic violence. They have the advocates for the victims and,
yes,
things. And I have seen it work amazingly, you know, for both sides of it.
Yes.
And so, and yes, you're absolutely right. They come in, they're clueless. Get 2 seconds with a public defender and off the,
yeah,
end. Okay, good. Thank you.
I would encourage all the commissioners and anyone in the audience that wants to become a member of NAMI, please do so. I think that would be very important. We'd like to show our support and appreciation to NAMI for helping us establish some of our goals and our aging readiness task.
Really. And I so appreciate the opportunity to come here.
Right.
Thank you.
We have a few minutes. I think I would like to open it up. Does anyone from the audience have questions for Peggy? Quiet group there. Right. Peggy, thank you so much for coming and speaking to us and taking your time to come and present. I certainly appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Would anybody like a few letters to take to any place?
Anywhere, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
You welcome, Lisa?
Definitely.
Okay.
And because I know a lot of us that, and if anybody didn't get them, you bet I'll pass them around.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much, Peggy.
Really appreciate it.
Right now we have a few open issues on our agenda. As I stated, the February work session will be Let's Share Housing, and they'll be presenting with us. In our work session today, we brought up wonderful presentation by our treasurer, Kirsten Ware, and we are actually going to present a couple of budgets that we need to have approved for projects. And so I will turn it over to Kirsten, and she can work with her counterparts, which is the committee chairs, on the budget.
Thanks, Kirsten. And let's start with the 50 Plus Expo. We have an event that we're planning. We had a lot of discussion, as Gary said, during our work session. The total amount for expenses for this particular event is estimated at $1,050, $650 of which would be for the registration. Do you want to go over line items, or?
I think we went over the line items before. The only thing I would suggest is we talk a little bit about how the final approval needs to be done by Oliver, and how we were going to just, this is a recommendation for him.
Great. So where we landed was to make a recommendation to approve the budget as written, but that it would be, that Oliver would have final say if there were additional items, any changes that needed to happen. For example, if a line item was a little more expensive, we would go to Oliver for approval on that. And also that this particular budget we anticipated would be coming out of the department, rather the Commission on Aging, with the county funds that we have here. So I would just ask our commission, and Leslie, so you want to add anything to that?
This is for the 50 plus, that's what?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I want to add is that we have a gracious donation for our giveaway from the Arts Commission on Arts. So that is exciting that we'll be able to partner with another commission and be able to give something to our community.
Okay.
And I would also point out that Lisa is a strong advocate for the coin purses.
I am. They're strong.
To be as giveaways.
Although I think we should do neon, something other than green. But because I think our colors would clash on it. So my own.
Good. Good. So do I have a motion to recommend the budget to Oliver for the 50 plus?
Motion.
Okay.
And I'll second it.
Good. Any discussion? If not, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Anyone abstaining? The motion carries, and we will recommend it to Oliver for the budget for the 50 plus. Thank you. And we're going to give you all the power, Oliver, to work with the budget that we've recommended there.
Be good, Oliver.
To do it.
All right. And then the second budget that we discussed and went over was with Volunteer Time Banking Project. This budget totals $11,500. We have, of that money, we have about $2,400, which would be estimated in-kind donations. We anticipate the in-kind donations would be part of a small kickoff event, and then we would have some general operating line items for this proposal. So, of that investment with the kickoff event, we'd be looking to raise $5,000, and we'd need to, bottom line, come up with $4,100 in financial donations to offset the budget. Everybody looked at it. We also looked at the fact that we're ending our fiscal year May 31st, so we kind of delineated what expenses would be coming out of this budget versus the budget that starts for us in June, and there was consensus during our discussion, so I'll just put out there. Is there anything else you want to add, Kathy?
The only thing I would add is, out of the $4,100 raised, we have committed funds for $2,000, so we only have additional $2,100 to raise on that front, and then we'll have a kickoff event that the Communications Committee will be helping us with on a fundraiser.
We already got it.
He's getting that in a minute.
I know.
It's already
That's
there.
That's how he does it.
Yeah. We're down with that.
Great. So again, I want to thank Kathy for the time banking, time and effort, and what a wonderful project I think this will be, that we will see come into fruition. So do I have a motion to approve the budget?
I so move.
Second?
Second.
Any discussions? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. So thank you so much for your hard work on the treasurer, with the treasurer and the committees. I certainly appreciate that. And it's kind of exciting to see us move forward on some of these projects. At this time, I'd like to open it up for public comment. So if anyone has any public comment, please feel free.
Don't all speak at once.
Exactly. Well, I certainly want to thank each and every one of you for coming to our commission meeting, and look forward to next month's presentation and working on the work plan. So we'll take, and I've gotten you out here 20 minutes early, so hopefully you'll enjoy the extra time, and we'll do that. Thank you so much, and do I have a motion to adjourn?
I so move.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Motion to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
No? No abstentions? It carries.
I don't want to go.
You don't want to go? You're having way too much fun, aren't you, Joe?
We need to go over the top, and we also need to have a fundraiser for people to start putting time in the bank. So when you so I already have, man, I have
that's going to be awesome.
I've already been talking to some other people about it and stuff, and I'm like, I don't know if she knows it's coming, but it's coming, and
all right.
Just going to talk her.
They owe me out of that.
Yes. I was just like,
it's so, I mean, I'm not saying that it has to look like
let her wind her up. I'm like, if we don't watch out, she's going to grab that nine thing as a project.
Well, yeah. That's where she used to be.
Or just on the desk, maybe.
I did. What is her name?
True. T-R-U-E.
You're not.